Rothenberg did a piece that he replayed today earlier that I heard, which kind of speaks to what the listener is talking about in terms of an analysis of how fascism particularly preys in terms on the petty bourgeoisie because they vacillate and they see their own personal individual interests first. And so what happens is when a sharp turn happens, they side with that which will be to their benefit. And so I think at BAI, one of the things that you saw were people who were friends, they were comrades of people, and as a very sharp turn to the right happened, they began to look at their own self-interest. I think Plato Benjamin made the comment.
Right.
He said people who had 10 cent, you know, and I don't mean a monetary thing, but people who had an eighth, suddenly saw the ability to have three quarters. People who had been harboring jealousies toward other people began to come out. People's fear, you know, in terms of if I do this, I might lose something. You know, people claiming relationships to the community and participation. And I always thought Clayton Riley's stuff was always just so interesting because during this last week before he was out of here, he went into this long tirade on the air of these claims of who he was, who he wasn't, things who he'd done, which he hadn't. And since he was the only one talking, it's like, you know, it's listening to somebody just talking to themselves. But this kind of franticness, and it's a psychosis. And you saw it in Germany, but you always see it when there are these sharp turns to the right. That what happens is people began to look at where am I in this equation, and opportunism springs. In fact, this is the last point, Hampton. Some people, you know, some people, a lot of people took principal positions not to come on this show during this siege. Other people actually tried to find ways to get programs on the show.
That's right.
Because they said, oh, now it's opened up for me.
And
now
know,
even political people who talk about all kind of revolutionary stuff said, if I can negotiate a job with Utrice, let me negotiate for my own self-interest. And even, you know, the line will be, well, we have to get the information out. Well, let me tell you, the information was that there was struggle going on at BAI, and the question was, what side are you on?
You know that one of the producers called my house to tell me not to go on the air and criticize what was happening, and in fact suggested that I go to WBAI and talk with Utrice because she may be able to give me a show.
Yes.
But I want to say this, okay?
Go ahead, yes.
We the listeners, knew from the tone that Utrice would take at times, in spite of the fact that I personally loved her because I loved the fact that she was presenting an analysis that needed to be said on the air. But, of course, she also was very oppressive at times with the listeners and very authoritarian. And we knew from that attitude, at least I did and I know many other people did, that if she had that attitude with us on the air, what would she be like altogether? So that when people told her, oh, you should run for office, I would say, no, I don't think it's a good idea. But I want to just finish by saying this to you. You played a piece on the air about the event that took place at the local on 101.
Yes. Uh-huh. No, your local 6, you mean.
At 101.
Mr. Clay addressing the national board. The gentleman who's here as my guest. You're talking about at the early show?
No. It was the skits that were being played.
Yes. That was at 32B. Go ahead.
Okay.
Go
ahead. This is in reference to the fact that when you guys mentioned the people who participated in those skits,
yes,
I was one of those people, but I didn't hear my name being mentioned. I was the I was the one who called.
Yes, right.
Dr. Shlomil
Armand.
I was Lolita.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. That criticism is taken in hand.
My name is Sanen.
All right. Say it again, sister.
Sanen.
All right. And I'm sorry I didn't remember your face.
Thank you.
No, that's all right.
Okay. Now, for all of these young people outside of Grandpa Lewis, if they will remember a movie called The Garden of the Franz Contini, these Jewish people that were not going to be involved with the fascists, you shake your head. Now, there's another movie, you can rent them. It was called The Pawnbroker. about a man who got over letting his wife get raped and murdered and his children getting sent to the gas chamber. And in the end of this movie, because this beautiful Puerto Rican who only wanted to learn Go stepped in front of him and died to keep him alive.
Yes.
He screams out and no sound comes. And there's a painting, and it's called The Scream.
Mm-hmm.
And there's this image of somebody screaming, and you know no sound is coming out of their throat.
Yeah. I want to thank you for
what happened here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Yes, we have another caller. Hello, good afternoon. Hello.
Hello, hi. I'm a listener from Connecticut.
Yes.
Welcome you back.
Thank you. What part of Connecticut are you?
In Weston.
Ah, I used to live in Fairfield.
Well, not far away.
1939.
Fairfield,
go ahead. Yeah, I worked for, Alcoa.
Well,
first Company of America. Go ahead.
First of all, wishing you another 90 years of participation in the movement.
That will disappoint my friend Hampton. He only wants me to get 50.
Yes, I don't think 90 years he deserves. He's earned another 50.
Right.
But I'm watching him.
All right. Go ahead, sir.
And you deserve a watch.
very good.
Beautiful.
Okay, here's my question.
Sure.
If once they figure out all this accounting, now we've all given money into this thing. I've received no premiums. Once this is all figured out, what would happen with the culpable parties? That sounds like there's a criminal aspect here.
There possibly may be.
It's investigated.
I don't know.
I'm very concerned about a bunch of people taking a station for a wild ride, jumping off. And having no culpability, having just, you know, like stealing a car. And
Before, I can go back to Pat Scott.
Yes.
Mary Frances Berry.
Eighth Avenue.
Bessie Wash. I mean, I have a very good memory.
Yeah, these are the people. I remember Bessie Wash running through the station.
Right. Now, what we need is we don't need Arthur Anderson. Not those thieves who finagled with Enron. We need, if they are short, I have a terrific personal accountant. We need all of the financial records because I cannot say, I don't have proof, but I have said there is a lot of pilfering that went on.
I do think so.
No, because under Samori starting and then continued with Bernard, we had four or five fund drives where we raised over $1 million.
Yes.
Where is the money?
We had an excess.
Hey, before the takeover, there was $500,000 in excess that was there to be
where
used.
Where is the money?
What happened to that half
where
million
is the
or
money?
More?
That I mean, was there we have account. Equipment that doesn't work, and they put $60,000 with ADT in there. You're on, look. There.
Surveillance cameras.
You know, surveillance cameras and guards. And
that's right. Also, money was spent in mind control.
Oh, yes, there's no question. And the
with
people,
PR firms and all that. And
PR and law firms. And let me tell you something else. Wherever they travel, we're talking about listener money. They first class.
Top
five-star hotel.
Top shelf.
I think Leslie Kagan had said at the board meeting that one of the tasks that the board was going to take up was to have an accountant to thoroughly go through the books.
Oh, it's needed.
And then let things go, because I think the credibility question is a very general important one. People want to know that story.
Well, the first thing that's going to be done is they got a $20,000 grant, anonymous grant, that actually starting on Monday for 2 weeks, two people are going to go down, I think, to Washington and go through the books. So the process has started, and this is under Leslie Kagan and Dan Coughlin, that this is all starting on Monday for 2 weeks.
That sounds very expensive. Two people for 2 weeks for $20,000.
Well,
I don't know how it breaks down, but I do know this, that if there's all this money disappeared, that there's got to be more than simply it being a bad experience. This has jeopardized the movement.
There's no question. And there may be criminal intent. I don't know. There may have been. I don't know. But
the only sweet thing that's come out of it, in my opinion, I'd like to hear your opinion, is that I heard an awful lot, and I did not receive my premium, but I'm waiting. Ralph Schoenman, who I listened to, and he perks my mind with a lot of information. I don't know that it's all true, I don't know how to sort all that out, but
right.
but he's certainly speaking, and he's out there on the edge of things, and he's talking talks and naming names, and I like that.
Uh-huh. Okay, thank you for your call.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hello, good afternoon. Good afternoon, are you there?
Hello, good afternoon. This is Grace from Manhattan.
Hi.
Hi, this is a little off the subject, but it's on the subject. It's on the money. The sports stadium idea that everybody is talking about. People didn't think maybe that sports stadiums are an excellent place to put a whole lot of people who didn't buy tickets. In other words, they were rounded up and put into sports stadiums.
It happened in Chile.
Happens all over.
Yeah.
Okay, thanks. Bye.
Thank you. That happens in Chile. You lock the doors. Thank you. Good afternoon. Hello.
Hi, Grandpa.
How are you?
Now I'm finally out of the clouds. Talk about being ripped apart for 13 months. I've been a 30-year supporter listener, and when these things happen, I'm sure that there are a lot of other listeners who don't have computer access and just have the telephone and an FM radio.
That's me.
Right, and all through this, I'd call the number for the Friends of BAI, and I'd listen, and there'd be meetings, and I can't get to these meetings, and it was just the radio and the things that were coming across, and the only thing that really kept me in that led me to believe that there would be some resolution was the fact that people like David Rothenberg and Mike Fader and, you know, Gary Knoll and people that I have a trust feeling about only because I listened to them, not because I know them. But I felt that if they were at the station under all that was going on, knowing there was something going on that a lot of things I knew nothing about, I felt that, and as they started falling off the screens, as they started, like yourself, you know, it would just be like, what is this going to lead up to? And I really can't tell you the feeling that I have right now, the fact that the station has come through this, because the fun drives during this last 13 months, as somebody who has always supported the station, I'm sure the dilemma came up for a lot of people. What am I doing? Should I send the money and hope that because the corporations are taking over, if I don't send the money, they're going to say they're losing money and they're going to go elsewhere to privatization. If I keep the money back, if I send the money in, I'm not supporting the people that are out. But let me tell you, as a listener, I am grateful to those who did get out there in the streets. I'll be forever grateful to all of you who stood up for everything, and whatever I can do, even if it's just reaching into my pockets for the rest of my life, I will be there for this station. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. Hello. Good afternoon. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Yeah, a couple of patterns here. What is the communication medium that creates September 11th? In World War I, railroad war. World War II, a radio war. World War III, the TV war of information. Is the ground of September 11th the cell phone and the internet? What is the technology that's causing the confusion we're in now?
Hmm. First, could you describe to me the confusion that you're in? I'm not in a confusion. Can you describe to me what you mean? You use the word confusion. What do you mean?
I find that people are not very good at communicating, and so I'm offering a clarity, I thought.
Okay, good. Before you make a judgment that other people cannot communicate, it's always best to start with oneself, because I don't speak for anyone but myself, and I'm sure you don't represent anyone but yourself. So, would you give me your clarity?
Larry, just a second.
Hello?
Just a second, I'm here.
Go ahead. Would you give me your clarity without making a judgment that other people are confused?
Right. I wasn't talking about people. I'm talking about how media communication interact with other communication, which is a big topic, and it's hard to bring it up in a talk show format, so I thought I'd make a few headlines. That's what I did. I welcome that you are critiquing it. Now let me try to explain again that the confusion is, what is George W. Bush? He's an image we see, right? He's an image we see. Bin Laden is an image we see. We don't have any interpersonal interaction with him, but we certainly have interaction with the systems and media they represent, don't we?
Go ahead, I'm listening. Go ahead.
Okay, good. That's clear so far?
Well, I don't know what you mean by it's clear. Do I agree with you? No. But go ahead.
Well, I'm interested in what you disagree on, so then I can figure out what I'm...
Well, now, this requires sitting over a cup of coffee for 3 hours, sir.
Okay, and I don't
have 3 hours, okay?
Right, that's right.
I just want to tell you that...
On this medium, we
George
don't have 3 hours.
We get bogged down
in details because we don't have much time in any electric medium. That's what's causing confusion.
You're the one who projected the detail that George W. Bush is just an image. Wrong.
You don't think he's not? You think he's more than an image?
Absolutely.
What is he?
What is he? He's the advance guard of a reactionary group of people who rule this system.
That have a... What is this system? A collection of mixed media.
No, it's not. Before there was mixed media. Was there mixed media when Grant was president?
Yes. That was the telegraph era.
Okay. Thank you very much.
That was the telegraph era.
Thank you. Your grandfather had a telegraph in his house? Stop kidding yourself.
Let him be up at the fair on Tuesday. Let him be up there and listen to Dr. Chomsky tell him what the media does.
Hello?
Good afternoon.
Hi, how are you?
Go ahead.
I just wanted to say that although your chief is no longer there, I actually like some of the things she did. And in terms of her intellect, I thought she was very smart. And,
she what? She's very what?
Smart.
You know who was smarter than her? Admiral Speer.
Okay.
And what do you mean by very smart?
Well, I don't know. She sort of educated me a lot because when I turned on the radio one time, this is about 5 years ago, just browsing through the radio channels, and I came across this lady talking, and she sounded so elegant. And... I think she's a lady that probably just made some mistakes in the last couple of months,
Made some mistakes?
Well, I know we would like to sometimes be a power to.
Can I say one last thing, then I'll
go ahead.
Fine.
In terms of the Earl Caldwell program, I would like to see him stay, at least him, because he does educate me a lot as well. He comes on the, I think, Friday mornings at 10 o'clock, or is it Wednesday mornings at 10 o'clock? No, actually, Friday mornings at 3.
Yes, go ahead.
Are these people going to go?
Hey, you're asking the wrong person. I have no authority. All I do is an hour and a half show every Saturday.
Okay, but I would like to see him stay. And also, that's it, just him. And I do feel bad that Utrecht is gone. I do think that everyone there needs to do is reconciliation and try to, sometimes let bygones be bygones and realize that people make mistakes.
That's what we are doing, brother.
Yeah, I think when you say reconciliation, though, let's be very clear. When President Allende tried to reconcile in Chile, General Pinochet had his brains blown out, locked people in the stadiums the woman talked about, had them killed and burned books. And Chile went into a period of extreme right-wing fascism for a number of years with many people disappearing. I don't mean to make an exact analogy, but I want us to remember that the coup that took place last December took the station outside of the question of just internal struggle. I remember looking at Utrecht pointing to the police intelligence division people in a demonstration out in the street.
That's right.
So this was not just a question of a squabble internally. Once the coup happened, people were banned and fired who had long histories of making this station as credible as it was. So to turn around and say this is somebody who didn't even used to take part in the fundraisers except when she wanted to. So I'm saying to turn around and say now that it's done, let's extend the hand. I think we should be very, very clear. Because it's more than just the station. It's the struggle that's going on in this country against the developing right. BAI, yes, it's a victory. We have to applaud ourselves. We have to look at the relationships that have strengthened because of it and get back on the front lines and not rest on our laurels. Because what happened here was tied to what was happening and is happening domestically and internationally, and it's still here, and it's growing.
And one thing more, I've asked the people here who are saying we should trust. Now, I'm not a fool. I trust snakes as long as they're not near me. And if you want to trust a person, consider locking yourself in a dark room and leaving them with the one knife in their hand. And if you'll trust that person, they're your friend. And if you have any doubts about that trust, you might die of a heart attack before you feel the knife coming in your back.
Thank you for your call. Let's go to the next call. Hello. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. I miss you so much, man.
Thank you.
You and Randy and the rest of you, and I can see where you're coming from in the sense that the guy said bury the hatchet, but also...
It was buried in our head for 13 months.
I was about to say, when you left, there were things said on the other side that was not too nice either. So before we can move on, first thing we have to do is recognize some of the things that were said by some of the people who said them. Before, you know, and they have to admit too, yes, we said this, we did this.
Mm.
Now let's move on. But you know what I'm saying, until that happens.
No, exactly.
By all means. Best to you and the rest of you, and I loved hearing Amy and our brother Bernard White again. You take care.
Thank you. Hello. Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Hi, Grandpa. I just wanted to say welcome back to you and your friends and help celebrate the leaving of Mama Duck and the Can-Can Macoo.
Uh-oh.
That's not nice.
Thank you. Hello. Good afternoon.
Hello, Grandpa. How are you?
I'm very well.
No, we met at 44th and 8th Avenue the other day.
Yes.
And on 45th and 8th Avenue is Joe Franklin's restaurant.
That's right.
So after the meeting, I walked in. I saw Joe sitting at a table, and I told him about the meeting. And he said to me, well, I really don't have to tell him about this meeting because he's been listening on WBAI. To the board meeting.
Right.
And, you know, I mentioned that I had seen you a little earlier, and you had tested my equipment by replaying, redoing a basketball game that took place in 1934.
That's right.
You had the pleasure of waiting. I mean, that's a fine way to test equipment, and I'm not going to give that tape away to anybody. But anyway, Joe Franklin said, do you have Grandpa's number? And I said, yep. He said, could you tell Grandpa and his beautiful wife that they are guests at my restaurant any time they choose to be? So I have his number. And, of course, he also has some... motive. He would love you to be a guest on his radio show.
Right.
And
right.
It's a small world. He works for Bloomberg Radio.
Yeah. And let me tell you something about Joe Franklin, who I know for a very long time. I knew Joe when he worked for, he was the record gopher for the famous DJ Martin Block, who ran the make-believe ballroom. A lot of the old-timers would remember. And one thing I have to say very positive about Joe, he gave every single person an opportunity. You could have been a total, your family didn't even know that you were a singer. He would put you on his show to sing. I got to give him all the credit in the world. He had the famous people on, but he had people, you came to Joe and you said, you know, I'm a singer. I play the piano. He put you on. And that's the way Joe was. He was, you know.
You know what's frightening, Grandpa? That I know
and
remember Joe Franklin.
Sure.
I haven't heard that name in so long. Now I'm dated. Now I must be getting up around with Hampton and Grandpa.
That's right.
I must be getting along with Hampton and Grandpa.
Yeah, you are.
Yeah, no, I'm not.
You remember the make-believe ballroom?
I'm afraid I don't. I do. I want to say yes.
Do we have another call? Yes. Hello. Good afternoon. Hello.
Good afternoon.
Yes, how are you?
Fine, and you love Cousin Sadie.
Oh.
I just want to know, during this period we're going through, how is Brother Shine, who was to go get medical treatment or surgery of some kind?
Wait. Before I went on the air, Hampton and I discussed it. And Hampton will give you the update of what it is. Go ahead.
Brother Shine is fine. He's recovering well. He's in therapy now. And I've tried to reach him a few times, and the
He had surgery on his spine.
Mm-hmm. Yes, on his back. So yep. He's receiving therapy for it now. He's not as mobile as he would like to be, of course. So it's a little bit of not touch and go, just time and curing. So he's beautiful, Sister Sadie.
Okay.
He's still ready to get back into the struggle and help those he can.
Okay. Thank you, love.
Thank you. Thank you,
Cousin
Sister
B. I'll be writing him soon.
Thank
you.
Tell him.
Thank you.
Thank you. Hello. Good afternoon.
Hello. How you doing, Grandpa?
Hi.
Well, welcome back. And I want to
welcome
you back. And I do remember your first show. A friend of mine who's an esteemed lawyer, a friend of mine, Anthony Mack, we remember when you first came on. And one thing that we noticed about you and what endeared us to you was that you inculcated in that first broadcast that the love of women. And what we looked at that upon is from the vantage point that that's very much so an African concept to endear and raise to the highest degree of your mother. I'm also a Muslim as well, and in the Quran it says of Prophet Muhammad, I'm sorry, in one of the Hadiths of Prophet Muhammad, he says to love your mother three times and then your father once, meaning that mother is to be respected 75% of the time more so than the father.
The father, right.
The only aspect on which I'm really confused about is the lack of talk as far as reconciliation is concerned. I heard the last comment of the guy that's Mama Dark and Can, you know,
right.
But I didn't hear a strong enough statement against those kind of sentiments that have been broadcasted over the air for the last 13 months. You know, I can't apologize for Brother Clayton Riley's belligerency and his disrespect to some of the callers, but he is a valuable, valuable, valuable resource here. We just lost another brother who was equally as well a great resource for communications for the black voices here. That was Brother Wayne Grice, if you knew of him.
I'll let you go. Can you explain to me what you mean when you say that Clayton Riley was a valuable voice?
Okay, well, he gave a certain analytical perspective that was his own that, just like you, Therese, had the ability to do, to give you a perspective that allows you to read deeper into the subject matter than maybe the common person would because of his long-time experience as being a journalist and a reporter and having years and years of experience in the radio. Now, this is not to castigate anything that you have done good on behalf of your show. I think you give the same analysis, but from a different perspective. One thing that I did love about you, Teresa's show, is that when she gave a perspective concerning the media reporting, she gave an analysis that was poignant, that was, I think, really deep and insightful as well. Now, this is not to say that no one else doesn't do a good job on the radio. I appreciate what Bernard White does, the volunteerism.
Right.
I mean, nobody's a greater volunteer than Janice K. Bryan. I want to send a...
Okay, wait. I have to, because we're getting close to the end of time.
Sure.
But I have to, you just mentioned, you crewed me in. Janice K. Bryan, your protagonist, I'm going to repeat now.
Okay.
Clayton Riley, last weekend, came up to her and said, "You Chicago bitch, you syphilitic whore, now tell me about her analysis, his analysis."
Well, you know, I won't apologize.
No, I don't need an apology.
Okay, but
I am telling you, I'm running out of time.
Okay,
I am telling you that what you heard from Clayton Riley and you three sleeved was a veneer for opportunism and ego.
Okay, well, I can't get into personality. I'm not.
Oh, I can.
Okay, I think we're departing from the more important issues here. If we stay into the realm of personality, we will never get to where we need to go. And
but brother, I don't think it was a personality question.
Okay,
your point that you make is a valid one around the question.
Okay,
so no, you have to stop talking. No, you have to stop talking for a second.
Okay, that's fine.
I think the point that you're making around being vigilant on the question of racism is very important. But I also think when reaction like this takes place, oftentimes it brings out the worst in people. People who are racist, it makes them more valid. That struggle has to go on. But it's not a personality. When people take a position with the police and the police intelligence division and make a career over other people's bodies,
That's not just a question
of
reconciliation.
She called us Red Squad. I'm not going to reconcile with that. Play a little music.
On the busy
tuned to Hi-Fi, WBAI 99.5 on your FM dial, New York.
Okay, this is Joe Franklin broadcasting on radio station WBAI.
It's 99.5% all natural and preservative free. WBAI FM in New York.
I love this radio station. This is no longer...
You're listening to WBAI 99.5 FM. Coming up next, Radio Free Aaron.
Opinion, my personal opinion, at 6:02 in the morning when I should be off the air, Amy Goodman's career is over. And she will never be heard on this air again. That is my opinion. And she will never be heard anywhere else. Her TV thing is just going to flutter off to nothing. And she will never be believed, taking credit, and she will never have credibility again.
Guardi le stelle che tremano. pensiero è chiuso in me. Il nome mio nessun saprà, nonno, sulla tua bocca lo dirò, quando la luce splenderà. Ed il mio bacio scioglierò il silenzio che ti fa mia.
Now the East of Avenue A Coalition presents Dr. Kilbasi and his Kapusta Choir doing PNN of Pain.
PNN News, we abhor you. You've lost the respect we had for you. You provide all the news if you bore you. Oh, PNN, don't censor news. CNN, you vomit headlines, like CNN sues you your deadline, while the thousands laid off are on bread lines. Let's put the new back in news. CNN busted reporters, hired gas with new marching orders. Its minions are merely disorders. Oh, PNN, give us some truth. PNN News, we're appealing. Let the news be so revealing. Macaroni stacked up to the ceiling. Oh, put the truth back in the news.
Bravo!
Bravo!
And thank you.
Welcome back to Community Radio. Let me look at some headlines here in the Irish Voice. WBAI Yanks Dissident IRA Radio Show. An exclusive interview with the former general manager, Bob Daughtry, who said he didn't like what we were doing on the radio. And he said he received a number of calls and letters which complained about radio free airing being too one-sided. He says that we should give all forms of opinions. I guess we didn't give the British side an hour and a half here. And then at the end, he says, several factors came to a head in recent weeks which led to Radio Free Erin being yanked. And what Daughtry said was the final straw. One recent show was dedicated almost entirely to in-house WBAI matters. And that happened to be the show Bob Fast was on. Now, I'm going to have to tell you this. We've interviewed a lot of people. For whatever reason, the second Bob Fast got on, bang, we were off the air. So you got to be careful of that guy. What I want to state here now is thank you, thank you, thank you. All the listeners that stayed outside, all the picketing, the meetings, the demonstrations. If it wasn't for you people out there supporting the station, yeah, Byrne.
Well, John, first of all, I'd like to wish everybody a Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Happy St. Stephen's Day. Happy Orthodox Christmas. Happy everything. All the things that happened when we were away. We're back now. We're back now, of course, on Tree King's Day. We're back now thanks to the greatest listenership in the world, the BAI listening audience. And I don't know what the hell anybody would do without a crew like this. This is when John said community radio. This is a very strange community, but it's out there.
Yeah, I mean,
I want to repeat one story that Amy Goodman told when Wednesday, which is the first day I was up here. Amy and I happened to come in at the same time, and the guy downstairs looked and said, "My God, I don't have a list." And he called up, and whoever it was, I still don't know who it was, answered his house and said, "Let them in." He said, "What?" He said, "Let them all in." Yes, we're back. This is WBAI. And one person I would, I mean, there are multitudes and multitudes and multitudes, but one person I want to say particular thanks to is Pete Caracas, who was downstairs in every kind of weather, at every hour of the day and the night.
Every kind of dress, too. At one point, they all showed up in dresses, all the men.
Honor of Clayton Riley.
Well, to comment on what was going on upstairs and something that was said. So the guys downstairs showed up in all dresses, and it was really, I mean, for me, BAI, I've grown, you know, born and raised, BAI are my parents' original subscribers, and it was, you know, no matter what was going on in my life, coming down here on Saturdays was just a really happy experience, and seeing Bernard and Janice and everybody, you know, it was really just a lot of fun and great stuff. And for this last year, I physically felt sick to my stomach, but when I came down here every Saturday, and I would walk, you know, get out of the subway, and I would walk as slow as I could walk, because I didn't want to get here and have to be at the station with the really negativity and really horrible people that were here. And I just have one, you know, one Saturday I came in, and the locks had been changed, and on Saturdays we always, you know, no one was really around, and we just had the door open and stuff. And that Saturday the lock had been changed, and so Eutrice had to come to the door with a smile on her face and let me in. You know, I've been coming down here for 12 years to volunteering, never getting paid, spending my own money. All of us have, and spending money on CDs and stuff. And she had only been around for a few years, and she walked up with this big smile and let me in, and just that. Really that horrible feeling of having, you know, to be locked out. And I said to her, I said, "Well, are we going to ever get to know the code?" And she turns her back on me and laughs and says, "Maybe," and walked away. And the sick feeling that I felt after that, I mean, it was a year, and it's just really great to be back and have people smiling and have our friends. And I also want to say about Pete and Curly and the other people downstairs when they were doing the vigil, no matter how, you know, it was really horrible to come down here, but, you know, Curly always had a smile on her face and was always telling us how, you know, great the show was, and Pete was down there with a big smile and a lot of energy, and then we'd have to leave them and come up here to be, you know, surrounded by people who just were really vile people. It was horrible, and it's just great to be back and see everybody and sit at home and be a listener and listen again and hear information.
Well, I remember one time when you came up and the so-called security guards were here. And he said to Liza, "Who are you?" He said, "Who are you?"
And I turned around and I said, I had never seen the person before in 12 years. And I said, "Who are you?" Like that, you know. I mean, it was unbelievable here.
All right, well, we're planning on doing, we want to cover some of the things we haven't been covering in the month, namely the Turkish hunger strike and what's going on at Holy Cross School. And after that, we're going to have a few musicians, going to play a little comedy, and then take phone calls. The doors are wide open here at WBAI. Listeners have been coming in and out of here all day. It's a great feeling. But right now, we'll hit Nolik for a quick review of what went on, and then we hope to go over to... Who's the next?
Ann Tanny, the principal of Holy Cross School in Ardoyne, where they just thought peace might have broken out. And this week, all the teachers were threatened with death.
All right, Nolik, you're there with us. We're glad to have you back. Nolik, you're there.
And so on. But it's good to be back, too. I never thought I'd say that. I'd be glad to hear people back on the air. It's usually too busy here on a Saturday evening, and people are chasing me around the country. I was just looking at my diary at the end of the year where we did programs from Prague and where else? We did one from New York, and we did one from... was in Boston. So we've been all over even last autumn, and I still don't know who these people are not on there, because most of the people I hear when I'm there, I have nothing much in common with them, but that's the way it should be. And I think you know now what it feels like in some third world countries when coup d'etat, they call them, by the way. They go on all the time, and even looking at the Middle East tonight, I see where somebody pulled down a radio station on the West Bank. It goes on all the time. Can I maybe summarise some of the changes that have taken place in Ireland? The main one, of course, is that we've got a new currency. Your punts, your sterling are all over. We're now in the euro. There are a lousy set of kinds, in my view. 5 is bigger than the 10, and if you're getting blind, you've all sorts of problems. But we've settled in pretty easily, and we're now in a thing called the Eurozone. Donegal has got 3 miles of territory with the rest of the Eurozone. It's got 115 miles of sterling to its right. So the evil partition continues, but for once the British are left behind, and we seem to be floating so far, so good. I just wanted to mention one or two people who passed away. My first employer, the manager of the Mayo News and founder of INEOV, Seamus O'Cahasy, a dear and good friend, and indeed another person who was buried today, and I couldn't make it because of my flu at the moment, Jim Tunney, former last town corla, Dáil-Éireann, and one of the first 12 musketeers that set up Telefish na Gaeilge 5 years ago, Yeshlav de Gurefshe. Can I just then mention two other people in New York that I owe letters to? One is Barry Donovan, our dear and good friend in the Irish Echo over there, who's been ill over the Christmas. We rang twice and there was no answer on the phone, but we'll get back to Barry again. I'll scream in town, Slaunta, August Avenue, and Faye. And the other one is the 101-year-old William Geary, my namesake, out in Bayside, who wrote to me for Christmas, but the letter was delayed. And all I can say, if my handwriting was good as his at 101, I'd be writing to him too. Now, about other stories, they're good and bad. You know about the continuing horrible situation in Belfast. But I let that to your Belfast reporters. We're going into a general election, and there are all sorts of scare stories here about, not scare stories, but what door Liam Lawler came through at Dublin Airport, whether Mary Harney should have used a state airplane, a fishing patrol plane, to go down to County Leitrim to open an off-licence. Mary Harney, by the way, got married at Christmas, and I suppose it was part of the post-nuptial celebrations, but all sorts of that, and nothing real about policy going on. Could I leave it this evening? As I said to you earlier, we'll probably concentrate more on analysis than on the opening news stories for the next couple of weeks. But of course, don't forget, folks, the 21st of January is the anniversary of the founding of Dáil-Éireann in 1919, which everybody here should stake their claim, and which is still not a public holiday in this country. That is the day of Irish national independence. And then, of course, the other anniversary is in 22, 16th of January, Michael Collins took over the castle. 14th of January, 2 days previously, the Parliament of Southern Ireland ratified the treaty. Good and bad dates in the thing. I'll be talking about some of them in Ballyvourna in West Cork on next Friday night, the 25th, hopefully. And I'd have some suggestions, including that Bertie goes to Bail them Law this year, that Michael Noonan goes to Liam Lynch, and then they call it off and get back to some accurate history writing.
All right, Noel, we thank you for having you on today on a joyous day here at WBAI.
I'm glad to be back again.
All right, thank you, and we're glad to have you. Right now, the amount of talent that is going through this station is unbelievable. We're going to go to Frank Langridge. You might know her from the Good Light Bulletin Board or Chris Z's Bulletin Board. And she played for Grandpa Al before, and anybody that didn't tune in, she will now play a little tune. And it's our way of honoring Grandpa Al for coming back today, too. The theme? Well, yes, Frank.
Yeah, may I also say, you know, I was one of the vigilers all last summer, and for your show and for Grandpa's.
Yep.
And I also, a lot of the time, I played Christmas Coo carols that were basically Christmas carols in a minor key. And this was in honor of what happened, you know, when you trees came in and changed the locks. And I'd like to play.
Well, we have a guest on, but throughout the show, you can hang around. Don't
later.
Worry. We're
gonna,
yes.
Okay.
Yeah, no, we'll have you on later. Go ahead, Sandy.
We have on the line with us from Belfast, Aunt Tanny. the principal of the Holy Cross School in Ardoyne. And thanks for coming on.
Not at all. Nice to see, to hear you again.
Yes, well, we would wish you were on under better circumstances. Just when, for people who don't remember, because we've been off the air for a while, Holy Cross School in Ardoyne, the young girls who go to that school endure 2 months of hell with blast bombs being thrown at them, urine, being called every vile name in the book. And then we covered that, and some people raised some money to for a pageant for the children. And we thought it was over. But this past week, it all started again, and there were even threats against Catholic teachers. Anne, can you tell us about that?
Yes. Well, just before Christmas, the protest outside was suspended, and we were absolutely delighted. And we had a very nice Christmas. We tried to make everything as normal and as happy as possible. And thanks to the money which we received from you and from other people, we were able to bring all the children to two Christmas pantomimes, which they thoroughly enjoyed. And we also received about 20,000 Christmas cards from the States. And the children were absolutely delighted with that. And we went off for Christmas thinking everything would be just great and we'd have a new year full of hope. But when we came back last week, there was still some problem on the road. Although there wasn't an official protest, there were still people standing around and there's still a low level of harassing people. And on Wednesday there was an incident outside and again we had to get the police and army, and half of the school had gone. The younger children had gone, but the older children couldn't get out again, and we had to try and get them brought down by bus to the shops near their home, and their parents couldn't come and collect them. So again we had this terrible situation where children just couldn't get out of school normally, and we had some children very upset the next day. So we continued on. Luckily, we had to close the school actually for a day, but the protest was not reinstated. We were afraid of that. And then last weekend, we were told by the police that there was a death threat for Catholic teachers in North Belfast. This has now been lifted, and yesterday we had a big rally at the City Hall in Belfast. There were 15,000 people came along to demonstrate against sectarianism. The rally was organised by the trade unions. It was also organised because, apart from the teachers, the postal workers were also given a death threat, and a young postal worker was murdered last Saturday morning. A young man of 20 who was out trying to do a job at 5 o'clock in the morning. He was shot dead because he was a Catholic. So we have had quite a few things happen in the last little while, but we're still hopeful that we can get back to some kind of peace and reconciliation.
How disruptive to your staff was this death threat to any Catholic teacher?
Yes, teacher in our area. Well, there were other schools involved as well, and they were very concerned, very worried, very upset. Our own teachers were very upset. Up until this week, I had been watching the children very carefully. We'd all been focused on them all the time. Although the teachers were suffering, I noticed this week they were particularly upset and particularly white and drawn and worried. And their children, of course, were worried about their mothers. And one teacher who has two small children, whom she usually finds it quite hard to get up for school, when she went to get them up on Monday, she found they were ready about quarter to seven in the morning. They were ready for school. And they're saying, "Mummy, we want you to get to school early because we don't want the bad men to get you." So their children were upset, their husbands were upset, their families were upset. It was just a very difficult time for all of us.
And I believe Friday, the trade union movement finally stood up and held a rally against bigotry and sectarianism.
Yes, that's right.
Were you able to participate in that?
Yes, we were all there. We were our whole staff was there. And we were delighted to see so many people. As I said, there were about 15,000 people there in Belfast at the City Hall, and there were venues all across Northern Ireland where people came out to show that they were against sectarianism and that this has to stop. This kind of violence is no use for any of us in Northern Ireland. I mean, our school has become a kind of a focus for fear and violence and sectarianism. And what I would really hope in the future is that we become the centre for love and peace and reconciliation.
And thank you very much. We join you in that.
Thank you very much.
That hope.
And thank you very much for all your kindness and all your support during our problems. Thank you.
Well, we hope that we do not have to go over to you again, and that life returns to normal.
I hope so. Thank you. Bye.
Okay. Now there's another story that we've been covering consistently here that we were not allowed to cover. which is the Turkish hunger strike, where 85 people have died over the course of more than a year. And in fact, the very first time we were preempted was the anniversary of the commencement of that hunger strike, when we held a rally here, and for some mysterious reason we were yanked off the air by the previous management, and that's something that isn't going to be happening anymore. Now, we hoped to have Gürkan Gür, the European representative of the hunger strikers, on. He is caught in traffic. We do have Rory O'Driscoll, who works with them in the London office. Rory, thanks for coming on.
No problem, Sandy, and it's great to hear you back on the air again.
Yeah, I wish the news on your end were better. I hear that the 85th person died on the hunger strike. Can you tell us a little bit about her?
At the start of the new year, there were three deaths which happened very close to each other. The last person to die was a woman called Leyla Çolak. And she died after 240 days on hunger strike. She had been released from prison because she was seriously ill, and she was taken to hospital. And she didn't respond to the medical treatment they gave her, and she died shortly after being admitted to hospital.
Rory, I understand that this, I don't know if this was the week before, the bar associations in Turkey made a proposal for a compromise in the long run, and to actually, we've been covering this story so long that we forget to tell people who may be turning in for the first time. This is about the F-type prisons, which are isolation cells for political prisoners in Turkey. And this week, or the week before, the bar associations made a proposal for compromise on that situation. Can you tell us about that?
Yes. In all the major cities in Turkey, there are bar associations. And four of the major bar associations throughout Turkey, in Istanbul, Ankara, Izmit, and Malatya, in the south of Turkey, said that they think that it's a reasonable demand for three of these cells to be knocked into one large cell. So, in effect, nine prisoners would be kept together in one large cell. They also said that the prisoners should have free association from about 8 in the morning till 6 in the evening. Now, after they made this proposal, the justice minister was on television, and he said that there's no way they could accept this, because that would be, in their eyes, a return to the dormitory-style prison system. But after this proposal was made, various other people came forward and they backed it. Some trade unions have, some civil servant unions have, some artists, intellectuals in Turkey. And we think that in time, people in Europe will pick up upon this proposal and they will publicly back it. And when that happens, we think that the Justice Ministry will be forced into accepting this demand, because it's a reasonable demand. No one's saying they want the return to the dormitory system, because we have to remember that the dormitory system, it was 50 to 60 prisoners being kept together in a large dormitory. Even though that was better than the F-type prison, the prisoners have accepted that if they were to have this new proposal implemented, that would be a fair settlement.
So there is at least now some hope for an end to the strike, if we can get a little more pressure put on to accept this very reasonable compromise.
Yes, I mean, I'd like to say that the hunger strike will be won soon, but it's still far from imminent. It's a matter of just highlighting this and making people more sensitive. Now, today, in the English newspaper The Guardian, there was a big feature on the hunger strike, and in it they mentioned this proposal that the bar associations had put forward. Now, we would be very critical of this newspaper article, because they're very critical of the prisoners. They're saying that the prisoners now have to compromise if they expect the government to compromise. And I don't think that newspapers like this really realize that the role they can play in this. No one's asking these newspapers to support the prisoners' ideology. We're just asking for people in Western Europe and in North America to be a little bit more sensitive, and just to take the time to highlight this and just to make this issue a topic which people can talk about, you know, rather than having this wall of silence we have to put up with most of the time.
Okay, Rory.